This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rappin, editor-in-chief for Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week is Paul Jaisley, staff editor and contributor for comic books, and Nick White, staff writer for comic books. Thank you guys for joining me this week. How has comics been?
Comics are still good. I didn't read a whole lot this week, didn't make it to the shop, but I did catch up on the two-issue Shazam Convergence tie-in that Jeff Parker and Evan Shaner did together, and I highly recommend that. Even if you have no interest in Convergence, like I did, I skipped it, except for these two, track down those two issues. Jeff Parker's writing nails the character, and Evan Shaner art with Jordi Belair colors. It's a gorgeous-looking book. If you're looking for a solid superhero story, grab those two issues.
Oh my God, what books is Jordi Belair just on, like, every book that needs colors? It's like her and Matt Hollingsworth and, like, that's it? Like, oh my gosh.
There's one more. Who I'm blanking on his name. Who is it? Nathan Fairbairn does all the other books. Okay. Those three cover them all.
That's true. I feel like it's one of those things like The Shining where if you were to go back to, like, from the comics from the 30s and 40s, you'd find colors by Jordi Belair, and you'd just be like, oh my God.
Exactly.
It was her.
Well, Nick, what did you read this week? Did you read anything this week, I should say?
I got around to reading Trees, or at least I think most of the first trade at your encouragement, and it's definitely a Warren Ellis book. I mean that both positively and negatively, I guess. Warren likes to play the long game, and either you're up for it or not. And I think probably the only thing that makes me super, super happy about reading Warren Ellis in trade is that I can't even imagine what it's like to read Warren Ellis in single-issue format. I mean, regardless of the content of the book, just relying upon my memory to recall these three plot lines that he's got running through each issue, that would just be insane. So I read that. I went to Tardy's and got some Jeffrey Brown books signed, his Jedi Academy books. I'm super excited to read those. And I read the last issue of Divinity, and I read the third issue of Ninjak, and then, you know, a couple other things. So, yeah.
Bowser. Man, well, I mean, I read my regular, you know, single pulls and stuff that I get. I've got a handful left still. Last week was a pretty, well, not last week, 2 weeks ago was a pretty big week. I still haven't read all of those. But I did, Paul, as I promised, I sat down and I read Transformers versus G.I. Joes.
Yes.
And what the fuck did I just read?
Yes. That's the greatest comic book ever. Yes.
It was, it's like, I was reading it and just like giggling the entire time at like the absurdity of it all. And like every page is littered with little dog tags about like every single person. Like, it was so out there. And part of me, I eventually just had to like give up trying to say like, oh, this is all just like, I had to give up in the sense of saying like that there's any sort of realism or realistic approach to this. These guys are telling like the coolest book that you wanted to write as a 9-year-old.
Yep.
Like, like you, I think you described it as like action figures fighting against each other, and like that's exactly what it is. And I took that with a grain of salt, but Jesus, that is the most accurate definition of that book. And it was a hell of a lot of fun. Like I could barely keep track of all the characters, and yet I still knew what was going on, and I knew who was good at what, and like it. I don't know. It made so much sense. Like I felt like a kid again, like a little kid playing with action figures in the backyard. Like and that was, I never thought that I could get that out of a comic book, and these guys, they delivered that. So I'm so glad that I actually sat down and read that finally.
Yeah, we'll have to have a longer in depth conversation about it because I really think it's a really amazing book. Yeah, and like
yeah,
you said,
for sure,
there's nothing else like it. And you kind of have to read it to believe it, or just to see it, if whether you believe it or not. So,
yeah, exactly. Nick, did you say that you read this too?
I read about the first half of the first trade. I haven't gotten around to finishing it, but
okay.
Yeah, you're completely right. It honestly feels like they hopped up a couple kids on like a couple bowls of Captain Crunch and then just set them loose with their Transformers and their G.I. Joes, and then someone bothered to take notes throughout, you know, the whole insanity. But I love how serious it takes itself. It isn't like a book that like, nods to the reader a bunch and says, you know, wink, wink, isn't this ridiculous? Isn't this sort of, like, you know, isn't this so dumb or stupid? I mean, it's a funny, like, over-the-top book, but within itself, it seems to be, like, very, very serious about everything, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's my favorite part, it isn't just constantly turning to the reader and, like, winking and going, like, we both get that this is really goofy, right? I appreciate that.
I think we might actually have to do like a special recording just all about that book. Wow. I think maybe we'll try to do that some week in the near future. Just like we'll do a regular episode and then we'll do like a half hour and then release that like as a special episode at some point.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on, you know, let's talk about our comic picks for the week. So, Paul, let's talk about your pick of the week, which is Batman 41. Actually, no, I forgot. I misread our notes. Batman 41 is both Nick and Paul's pick. So, you know what, Paul, you go first and talk about it, and then Nick, you can go next and you maybe respond.
Generally repeat the same points, just less eloquently. Yes. That's the plan.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Well, did I write that in the notes? Because that was the plan.
Well, I'm excited for this. If you haven't been paying attention, this is the issue where the new Batman makes his official debut. If you read the Free Comic Book Day issue that DC put out, you know who it is. I won't spoil it, I guess, even though at this point I think everyone knows.
I think we can.
Okay. It's exactly who I assumed it would be. It's Commissioner Gordon is basically Batman now. Yes.
Are you kidding?
Believe it or not. So at the end of Endgame, it looked as though the Joker and Batman killed each other. And Gotham, of course, realized that they need a Batman, and the approach is really interesting because it looks like the Gotham Police Department is working alongside this private corporation, developed a Batman suit, crime-fighting suit, that Commissioner Gordon is going to wear. I don't think anyone knows it's Commissioner Gordon except him and maybe a few other people. This Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo have been doing a really interesting job with Batman where they have these big conceptual ideas about what Batman means as a character, and they're kind of putting that into a big superhero story. It doesn't always work for me, but I'm really interested to see how it pays off with this new approach and how long they can keep this particular story going before Bruce Wayne inevitably comes back. So I'm very curious about this. What do you think, Nick?
I completely agree with you. I love the fact that Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo have sort of earned themselves this, you know, serious... people take them seriously after the last couple years of them doing Batman, and I think readers that wouldn't otherwise be game for this, I think are actually more... I hope they're more willing to go along with this idea. I absolutely love that Scott Snyder is the sort of writer that has said, if we can't get out there and try new things and really emphasize telling good stories instead of maintaining canon or engaging in crowd policing, you know, he said, what's the fucking point? Well, if comics can't transcend that idea, where is this medium? And so I love that he's doing that with such a mainstream book. And I think a lot of readers, I know he's even said, you know, there are people that have tweeted him not the nicest things on the face of the earth about this. And and there are the people, and I think we all know a ton that are, you know, Batman equals Bruce Wayne, Bruce Wayne equals Batman. And for me, what I love is that personally, Bruce Wayne does not equal Batman. The whole idea is that the, you know, the cape and cowl go beyond Bruce because he is a mortal man. And we can go on to that soapbox forever, but I think it's a new idea. I think it's a breath of fresh air, and I've always loved when you see Bruce sort of give up the cape and cowl, either willingly or unwillingly, and see what happens. I loved it when Dick Grayson. I liked Dick Grayson when he was Batman more than when he was Nightwing. So I loved it when he took over the helm, and that was also coincidentally Scott Snyder. So we'll see where it goes. I am interested to see how sustainable this is. I do wonder if it will be much like the last issue with Bruce disappearing, where maybe he'll come back and run Batman Inc. or something, and he'll, you know, be visible, but he'll be alive and visible, but maybe he won't actually be Batman again for a while. And I would be interested to see where that would go too.
Yeah, it's very Snyder's run has been kind of a mixed bag for me. I think overall it's been good. What's kind of fascinating is that he's really kind of doing the same conceptual or big ideas that Grant Morrison did, but he's doing them in a very explicit way. He's telling the reader, this is what this is about. Whereas Morrison's run was covering a lot of the same ground, but in the way Grant Morrison does, where it's very esoteric and it's you kind of have to dig for the details and find out exactly what he's trying to say. So it's almost like Snyder's basically taking the ideas that Grant Morrison did in his epic Batman run and doing them for a mainstream audience, saying, all right, here's the interesting things about Batman. I'll spell them out for you and hold your hand while I explain it.
Yeah,
that doesn't always work for me, but I'm glad to see him engaging these types of ideas, at least. And Capullo's art, oh my gosh, that's the reason I buy this book, honestly. For me, it's the
color work, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that FCO, what's his name? His color palette for all of the Batman run has just been amazing, because obviously there's a huge temptation to go grays and blacks and browns and whatever, and he's just like neon colors all over the place, and I love it.
Man,
it's great.
He was awesome on Invincible. I'm so mad that he's on Batman.
Yeah.
Well, okay, you know, actually, having only read Death of the Family, like, I feel like I need to carry this trophy with me that says, I've only read one arc of this new Batman run. especially, Ron, you guys.
Not if it's that one.
That aside, how does this story, seeing that I know nothing about really what's going on in the DCU, and I will openly admit that, how does this play into Convergence at all? Like, do we see anything tie into Convergence? Because this book, didn't come out during Convergence, correct?
Right.
So are we seeing, like, the aftermath of Convergence now in this series?
If I had actually read Convergence or knew what it was about at all, I could answer that, but I didn't pay attention, so.
I don't think Paul or I are qualified to discuss that.
Okay.
I don't even...
So 41 ahead, is just a continuation of 40 then? There was no... Okay, yeah. Okay. That's all I was really asking. I'm assuming we'll probably see some Convergence stuff come... I'm assuming you'll probably see some Convergence stuff come in later. And maybe one day I'll pick up the book and I'll go, maybe I should have been reading all along.
Right.
That's cool. I just didn't know if you guys knew offhand, but... Mm-hmm. Sounds like Batman's pretty great still. That's actually really amazing to see a team stick together on a book like this for so long and have it still be, on the whole, very good. Like, maybe there are some dips and maybe it's not for you 100% of the time, but if you can say that a vast majority is for you and that you liked it, that's, like, astounding. I can't think of a lot of, like, teams like that that are, you know, on a mainstream book that do this really, really well.
Yeah.
Outside of Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Bagley back in the day on Ultimate Spider-Man, you know? So that's really cool to hear. So if you guys don't mind, I'm going to step in and I'm going to talk about my pick for the month, which is, or this week, I should say, is Injection Number 2 by Warren Ellis and Declan Shelby and Jordi Belair, because I'm a sucker for this book. I read Number 1 and it didn't floor me, not in the same way that Trees did, I think. Trees, like, took me by storm. Injection Number 1 made me go, okay, this is Warren Ellis. This is him doing his thing. I'm going to have to wait a couple issues. and that's not a bad thing. I wrote this, I don't know, 300 or 400 word thing on Reddit, on the comic book subreddit at one point, right after Number 1 came out. Everyone was like, what did you guys think? And a bunch of people were like, well, I don't know if I really liked it. I don't know what the hell was going on. And my explanation of it was, you know, Ellis right now in comic books is trying to explore, like, lesser traveled paths in comic books and trying to take all of the stuff that he's been building up in his head that he took off 2 years from comics, and, like, I think he just kind of sat and thought about the medium and thought about, like, the type of stories you could tell. And he's kind of going the way of, like, maybe Alan Moore and getting into, like, the weirder stuff, but that's kind of always been his thing. If you look back at work that he did on, like, Gravel and work that he did on what was the other series that he did? I guess it was Strange Love or Strange Kiss or something. It's the same stuff, essentially. But it was, like, really weird, dark, magic-y stuff. And then you look at these ideas that he follows in, like, Trees, or that he follows in, like, Global Frequency about, like these uber, like, I guess, groups, people that oversee the whole world, like almost Illuminati. Like, he's tying all of this in with, like, the weird, like, folk magic that he's always been akin to. And Injection feels like that culmination of both of those. And as much as number one may have not been, like, a book that you get really hooked on in number one, Ellis doesn't have to do hooks anymore or chooses not to do hooks anymore. And I know that this bothers a lot of people. I think I explain it as, like, you look at some writers out there, like Rick Remender, Joshua Williamson, and who was the other person I mentioned? Doesn't matter. Even Kirkman, I guess. Like, they've got hooks on their new number ones that are so deep that, like, if you try to remove the hook, it's going to disembowel you. Like, these guys, they write books so well that you can't help but read number two. Whereas Ellis, you think about it as like reading a novel. I see it as like reading a novel. Like, the first chapter probably doesn't sell you. Like, you read the book because the synopsis sounds interesting, so you go, the first chapter didn't sell you, but you kept reading this chapter two because you knew, or you know, that that story is going to be a bigger, like, have a bigger arc, and it's going to be 450 pages. It's not going to be contained in 12 or 15, which to me, I consider like a, you know, a single issue would be like a chapter. And I think this book is probably going to run for 30 or 40 issues, and it's going to have a much grand, or a really big story that's going to be like, you could put this all in one graphic novel, and it would be a contained story, and shouldn't have been serialized. Because like stories like this, like a Hickman or even Morrison in some respects, I think nowadays, like, these guys write books that should just be original graphic novels, but they're serialized because that is a lot easier to sell to people. Like, I'll buy a book for $2.99. I don't know if I'll jump into an $18.99 graphic novel that's got 250 pages. It's less of a risk. And I think Injection number one did enough to sell me and say, okay, here's a bunch of weird shit that Ellis is going to touch upon, and wait for everything that happened in the first issue to fold out into another, you know, 30 issues. And I really hope that this series continues and sells well. I have a feeling that number one did pretty well just because of the team that was on it. I think number two and number three will be a real real decider on if this book survives. And I'd be really upset because I think what's been laid out with this whole weird tie to nature and this weird, like, mental scape thing that he's doing is going to be really great. So I'm really excited for number two because it's just going to be another chapter in this much bigger book. Did you guys read this book at all? Did you read number one?
No. Probably because I'm going to wait for the trade. That's just. I mean, you said it, and I'm glad you said it because then I didn't have to be the one who said it first. Ellis really could just be released most of his stuff as just original graphic novels, and unfortunately, it's a lot harder to drum up publicity for that and just keep it constantly on people's minds.
Well, yeah, especially when you're like a serialized writer, like, you're known as a guy that writes single issues. Like,
right.
It's kind of hard to make that transition and be like, oh, I'm writing original graphic novels. And he did it with Avengers book that came out on the original graphic novel he did. But I don't think it's not the same. It's definitely not the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll wait when it comes out in trade. I might. Is the art nice?
It's Declan Shelby. It's interesting.
Moon Knight, right?
It's like Moon Knight. Okay. I think it's got a little bit of a grittier feel than Moon Knight did, which is kind of strange to say. But it definitely felt faster paced. I don't know how to describe it properly. I think, like, gritty is a good word, but not like 80s Daredevil gritty. So I suggest
Frank Miller they do, gritty.
There's this the last couple pages of the first issue. I was like, holy fucking shit! They're really really distinguishing pages, and I'm like, oh man, they're touching into some really fucking crazy stuff in terms of, like, storytelling and, like, just the look and feel of this book. Like, they do the first 20 pages standard comic book style, like, real world, blah blah blah, and then they get into this other thing, and it kind of reminded me of Supreme Blue Rose and just, like, the weird out there look of it, and it's gonna be really cool. That's all I could say. I'm real excited for it. So, cool. Well, we're going to take a quick break then, and when we come back, we are going to go to the news gloss over, and then we will talk about some other topics. So we'll be back in just a moment. For this week's news gloss over, we've got a couple of things that we wanted to talk to you guys about, maybe just mention. They're not really huge stories, but we just wanted to mention them because they are big, important things that happened. And I'm going to start that this week. This is kind of a bigger story, but we decided not to talk about it. Marvel announced their big, all-new, all-different stuff that's coming out after Secret Wars, which editor-in-chief Axel Alonso has said is not a reboot, but a lot of things are changing. We're looking at a couple different Spider-Man characters coming into the universe that's going to be part of the main storyline. Spider-Gwen, Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales, Peter Parker is going to be back. We've got Old Man Logan showing up. We've got X-23 in a Wolverine suit. We've got a new Iron Man who we're not really sure who that is yet. But Brian Michael Bendis is writing the series, so that should be interesting. We've got a lot of different stuff going on with Marvel, and it's all new, and it's all different, and it's not a reboot. I'm a little upset about this as a big Marvel fan. I don't know why I'm upset, but everything's changing, and change is apparently bad in comic books or something. I think a lot of it is just me being burnt out on this constant changing and constantly saying, it's not changing, but it is, that Marvel's been doing for the past 2 or 3 years. Nick and Paul, do you guys have any thoughts on this real quick? Just to say anything about this change?
I really don't have much to say. I'm not reading a whole lot of Marvel stuff, and the stuff I'm reading tends to be not connected to the overall continuity. So I kind of don't care.
Okay.
Oh, man. For me, it's sort of like just looking over the fence onto your side of the your side of the grass there, Mike, and just sort of going, oh man, what a mess that is, and then just looking back at my own and going, well, shit. I guess I'm glad it's both of us. Yeah, as a casual observer, it just seems really weird because Marvel in the past has not really shied away from, hey, guess what, we did 8 issues of Captain Marvel and we're still gonna keep doing Captain Marvel and we're just gonna subtly like rename it all new or Marvel Now or give it a different prefix and maybe mix it up a bit, but we'll sort of pretend like nothing really happened. It seems like Marvel does this sort of stuff a lot more than DC, and a lot of times it really seems so subtle, like they just do it book by book, that you really don't even notice. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. So it just seems really odd that all of a sudden Marvel is like, guys, it's nothing is new, nothing is changing, it's not that big of a deal, it's not a reboot.
Well, they did destroy their whole universe in the comic book, so like, right, if they wanted to do a reboot, they totally could.
It just seems like a lot of the characters that people were sort of like, oh man, I wonder if Thor is still gonna not be, I guess I don't
Donald
know what
Blake.
Donald Blake, yeah, you know, or I wonder if Spider-Gwen's going to make it into this new universe, or I wonder if we're going to have both Spider-Men in this new universe. It seems like all of those things were a resounding yes, so in a way, I don't know why most people would be shocked and or upset. I think the only thing people were a little bit confused about, at least, is that Hawkeye doesn't appear present in any of the new promotional materials, which is sort of odd.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of characters that people are like, where are they at? And Marvel's been slowly releasing promo images saying that, like, oh, no, don't worry, they're here. So it's going to be interesting to see how it turns out. I don't know what I'm going to buy into, if I'm going to buy into anything at all. I know that X-Men aren't a thing yet, and Fantastic Four apparently are being distributed across the universe, not as the Fantastic Four, but as just the characters. So
we're splitting up the band.
Who knows? It's going to be interesting to see how things play out in the next couple of months. I'm real hesitant on even trying anything, just because I don't know how much I want to put up with this. So We'll see.
Yeah, beyond that, I think another topic that merits being brought up is, alongside all of those Marvel announcements, several of which were made at the New York Comic Con Special Edition, was the fact that New York Comic Con Special Edition was home to another interesting feature, which was the fact that this was an opportunity to buy tickets early for New York Comic Con. And so you had a lot of people that were going to New York Comic Con Special Edition for the expressed purpose, and possibly the only reason or the only thing they were even able to do was to stand in line and get tickets for New York Comic Con, which, you know, what a con experience. I mean, I guess
people bought tickets,
yeah,
to this convention to get in line to get tickets for another convention.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
They did that all day.
Yeah, hours upon hours, yeah.
Cool. So okay. From what I know about New York Comic Con, it's $20 or $30 to get in for Sunday or Saturday, respectively. So people paid $30 just to get in line to pay $100+ for New York Comic Con tickets. Gotcha. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, there's just something so freaking wrong about that. That's just, oh, man. I guess most of cons are spent standing in line. So in a way, I guess this was just a more consistent line standing experience. But just bizarre. I mean, it really says something about where New York Comic Con is as a con.
Yeah,
it really is a testament to that, if anything else.
I'm super excited to go this year. I didn't go do that this weekend, by the way. I am going to get tickets like a normal person.
You might not get them now. Yeah. I mean, you might.
No, I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about that. Either way, that's still bizarre. I wish that I could have gone to New York Comic Con Special Edition, but I just didn't have the time this weekend, unfortunately. But anyways, another comic book topic, you know, because why not? Nowhere Men is returning this fall in 2015. You guys, I can't explain how excited I am. If for those of you who don't know, Nowhere Men is a series that Image published 7 or 8 issues of. I can't remember exactly. That were all collected into a trade. And it ended, I think, late or early last year or something, and it won a bunch of Eisner Awards. Maybe it was 2013 even.
I think it was just nominated. I don't know if it won any Eisners, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was just nominated. Yeah, you're correct. But the series basically finished its first arc, and then the artist on that series, he kind of, like, went off the rails in terms of just, like, all of the... I think hype got to him, and I think he had some family problems and things like that, and just the series just couldn't continue because he couldn't draw it. And Image has this very strong policy of unless special circumstances are made or the creators decide that it's for the best, like one artist, one writer consistently through a series. I mean, like, and there are exceptions out there, but on the whole, it's usually the same artist, same writer for an entire run of a series. And I think Eric Stevenson wanted to stick with the artist on that series, Eric Stevenson being the writer. And also the publisher of Image Comics. This series taking a break so that the artist could recuperate is incredible. And as of this most recent previews book that came out, it was announced to say, hey, you can reorder Nowhere Men Volume 1 because there's a new issues are coming out this fall. So it's super exciting for all of us Nowhere Men fans that were out there. You should definitely read this book. Seriously, go pay the, I think it's $12 or something like that for the first volume, and read it. It is probably one of the greatest sci-fi books I've read in a long time. Imagine if the Beatles were scientists. That's essentially the way that I pitch it to people.
Yeah.
Okay. Sold. Oh, yeah.
Cool.
We knew that would work.
you hit my two favorite buttons. Yeah, the Beatles and comics. So
yeah.
Sold. And one final announcement of sorts that caught my attention, at least. We have apparently another comic book being adapted to the big screen, but this one will not feature any superheroes. Daniel Klaus's 2010 book, Wilson, apparently has been in development for the past 5 years or so. Looks like it's finally moving forward with Woody Harrelson and Laura Dern attached to star in it. If you didn't read Wilson... or unfamiliar with Daniel Klaus. Klaus's books are, he wrote Ghost World, which obviously was adapted to film. He did Art School Confidential, which is also adapted to a far less successful movie. But Wilson is a book about a horribly depressing, misanthropic, bitter man who finds his ex-wife and their daughter that she had given up for adoption after they were divorced, and basically kidnaps them in an attempt to make a family. It's a horribly depressing book in the way Daniel Klaus is. But what's interesting is that the book itself is really committed to being a comic. Like, it's written so that each individual page is a standalone comic strip, basically, like a newspaper strip with a punchline at the end. And the art style changes from page to page. Sometimes it's very realistic. Sometimes it's very cartoony, in a Sunday morning cartoon kind of look. I think it's a great book. I really enjoyed it. I'm curious to see how they're going to juggle all that into the film adaptation. But the nice thing about adapting non-superhero comics is that you can just focus on the story. No one's going to be concerned if Woody Harrelson looks like the character Wilson from the book, the same way they would if, you know, whoever's playing Batman or Superman looks like that character. So
right.
There's more freedom to just adapt the story as it is and not worry about the sort of visual element of it. I'd be curious to see when this comes out. I think it'll be an interesting movie. If anything, if they're able to capture the tone of the book the way they were able to in Ghost World, which is probably the most successful comic book adaptation of a non-superhero comic I've ever seen.
So is this? So does this book have like a darker humor to it, or is it just like straight up depressing?
Oh, no, it's very humorous in of the way that Klaus, only he does. I don't know. It's very misanthropic. Like, when I read it, I identified with the character Wilson right away, because he's this guy who wants to have a connection to the rest of humanity, at the same time loathing humanity. You know, this weird juggling where it's like we should all be interconnected because we're all living together as one. At the same time, everyone except me is an asshole. But then, when the book suddenly turns and you find out what a horrible, dark person he is and how abusive he is, you suddenly cannot identify with him at all. And it becomes, the humor gotcha. Becomes very dark. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. I think Daniel Klaus he's one of my personal favorites. I think that's one of the better books he's done in the past few years. So read it now and then go see the movie, hopefully a few years from now.
Cool. Well, I think that does it for the news gloss over. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're actually going to talk about some bigger, longer topics. So we'll be back in a moment.
I know that you two guys are geeks, and I know that both of you spend a large amount of time on the internet, so I think it probably goes without saying that both of you, and probably a fair amount of our listeners, have encountered a lot of those websites that sell geeky t-shirt designs, and the t-shirt's only available for 24 hours at, you know, a really great cost of maybe $7 or $8. And a lot of them are, you know, pretty witty and somewhat enticing, so you end up buying a couple. But recently, there's been, and unfortunately, this is not the first time, there's been accusations by people in the comic book community that a lot of these sites that are hosting these designs are hosting content that has been basically stolen from creators in the comic book community. It's unfortunate, but it's happening again. And Tommy Lee Edwards, who some of you probably know for one thing or another, he did, I think he wrote Vandroid, and he did the covers for that, and he did some wonderful Batman Eternal covers, has sort of been leading the charge this time. Have you guys heard about any of this before? I mean, this is not the first time this has happened.
I've heard of some of it, but when you say host, do you mean like they're just hosting the images, or are they selling stuff?
Right. Well, obviously they're the ones selling the t-shirts. They're not the ones that are hunting down or locating these images. Obviously, creators, quote unquote creators, or quote unquote designers, are coming to them with these designs to be sold via the site.
Gotcha.
You know, it's just gotcha. A mild distinction. I don't want to be saying that, you know, a lot of these places are willfully going out themselves. The t-shirt companies are not going out and hunting down this content.
Right. Yeah, and I've heard of stuff like this before. I know that, like, David Aja's, like, art is never for sale anywhere, specifically because I think he has it in whatever contracts he signs with, like, Marvel and whoever, that, like, any of the art that he produces for them cannot be, you know, licensed and sold and stuff like that, which is pretty yeah. insane to me. But simply because, like, man, I would buy, like, panels and pages of Hawkeye and put them on my wall. Just because, like, specifically that Pizza Dog issue of Hawkeye, like, I would grab pages and panels out of that and just be like, yeah, fuck yeah, look at this cool little business card I made, you know, or, like, had printed out. I don't know, that would be so cool. But I've heard of stuff like this before, of, like, people stealing a page of a book and then, or a panel from a book and printing it out on, like, a cafe press or you know, Redbubble in specific. I've seen that a couple times where people just print these, you know, steal like a high-res copy of a book and or scan it in or something, and then they just put that panel on a t-shirt and sell it. But I didn't think, I always assumed that stuff like that just got shut down immediately. Like, someone would make a report and they go, oh, obviously, like, someone would report to Redbubble saying, hey, you know, this person is stealing art, and they're like, oh, okay, yes, that's definitely the case, and they'd shut them down, like, immediately. So maybe only 10 shirts would be sold or something like that. But I didn't realize that, like, I know, Nick, you in our notes, you posted some links to tweets that had links to pages or screenshots of pages where this was happening. And it seems like a major problem that these companies like Redbubble and things aren't dealing with as quickly as they probably should.
Right. And the usual defense by most of these sites or the people that are hosting the designs, either whether they're being put on a t-shirt or whether even worse in my mind, because it seems like there's even less confusion to be made, that are just flat out being sold as a print. Most of these places will say, well, if you come to us and you have a claim that the design has been stolen, and I assume they say, you know, you can prove it, we'll take it down. But understandably, a lot of these people, Tommy Lee Edwards included, have said, well, guess what? I don't have enough time to police the internet, looking around to see who's got my stuff. It would be really nice if when people come to you with things, you at least do a little due diligence and find out whether or not this is actually someone's design or if they're just flat out stealing other people's stuff. But of course, most of these places aren't interested in doing that either. Or they'll say that they do it to some level, but obviously not.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate that the onus for finding this stuff out rests on the creators themselves. So, like you said, they don't have time to track down who's using these images that they've created. I know this happened recently with a company that sells wrestling t-shirts. So there's a similar situation where there's like one particular design that this one company owned, and all these other independent wrestlers who are selling t-shirts through this particular site, which I won't name, basically said, look, they're selling knockoffs of this particular design that this other company kind of owns the right to, you know? So they had to pull down all these derivative designs off the website. And some fans were upset saying, you know, why can't they just create these images and sell them knowing everyone knows what it's a knockoff of? But when you're dealing with original art that someone's created and you're just making a scan and selling it as a print and pocketing that money, that's so absurdly unethical. That I can't even fathom why someone would do that and why a company like Redbubble or whatever wouldn't do more to stop that, because it reflects poorly both on them and their clientele who are selling stuff through their site.
Well, yeah, and what's interesting about that is that could eventually end up like making them, I don't know, like not blacklisted, but like that could tarnish their name in terms of saying, you know, well, Redbubble, we all know they just sell pirated stuff. So if you buy from Redbubble, you're pretty much supporting piracy. And especially when it comes to comic books, like it's such a niche thing. Like, yeah, you want to have a Batman shirt, or yeah, you want to have, you know, a print of this really cool cover or something like that. It's like, go through the official channels. Like there are ways to get these from the artists, and maybe you don't want to pay that $35 and instead you want to pay $12 from Redbubble. But like, you're literally, like, when you do that, you're taking money out of these creators' pockets. Like, they went out of their way to make these prints themselves, and it's probably going to be high quality, and it's probably going to be signed when you buy it from them, or when you go to a con and you buy it from their booth, and they'll sign it. I mean, these creators are not assholes. You know, these are people that
most
are
seriously...
Well, nonetheless, like, 99% of creators, if you go up to their booth and are buying something, they are the nicest people in the entire world to you. Like, they are so excited that you took time out of your day with the hundreds of other artists that are there and hundreds of other booths that are there to stop by and say, hey man, I like this Daredevil print that you made. I realize that you made original art. You put time and effort into this. I'll gladly pay $20 for this thing. Because, like, I don't know, it's just like pirating comics, you know. It's just like it's that same idea that, like, if you're pirating an indie book or you're pirating any book, really, like, at the end of the day, you are potentially taking money out of the pockets of people that are well-earned money out of their pockets. And like, I don't know, you could potentially, like, if you and 100 of your friends are pirating a book, that's 100 less sales for that book. You know, it's one thing to go out and say, okay, I bought the physical copy, I want a digital copy too. I think that falls into a gray area. But I think, like, if you're straight up pirating everything, like, you're not doing the comic book, like, you are not a comic book reader in my mind. Like, this is where things get real elitist for me sometimes. I'm like, if you read all your books pirated, like, then what the fuck are you doing in this community, man? You are not contributing. You can have all the opinions that you want and say, well, I read all these books. It's like, well, did you participate? Did you do your due diligence like the rest of us? Because otherwise, like,
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That, I don't know. It rubs me the wrong way, and I realize that's like a huge asshole statement to say, well, you should be happy that they're reading comic books. It's like,
no.
But like, that's not a good excuse.
This is an industry that operates on such a thin margin of profit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comic books themselves, you know. This isn't like the music industry or whatnot. I mean, obviously.
Music industry is the exact same way now, though.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you go to Bandcamp and just stream all your music, like, you're not helping that company. You're not helping that band. You know, I mean, it's better for you to go on Spotify and stream someone's music than it is to just stream it on, like, YouTube or stream it on something else. Maybe YouTube's an exception because of ads. But nonetheless, like, if all you're doing is pirating music, then you're not a real fan. Like,
right, and I mean, but with obviously, like you said, with music, you sort of have these alternatives where if you don't have money, if you're willing to sit through some ads or something like that, then I guess, quote-unquote, you're all right. Whereas, obviously, with comics, I don't think there's anything even remotely close.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can get free comics on, like, Comixology or Amazon or Scribd or Marvel Unlimited. I mean, like, there's a lot of opportunities for you to get free issues, and you can go to free comic book day, and you can do all this stuff to get samples. But, like, it falls into a weird thing. Like, maybe you pirate your books, but you buy a bunch of original art. Maybe that's one thing. Maybe you're contributing that way.
Or, the whole, I steal music, but I go to the concerts, sort of.
Yeah, it's that same mentality. It's like you pirate all the music, but you go to the concert. And quite honestly, at the end of the day, if you're doing that, then the artists are actually making more money from you, which is good.
I've heard that.
You know, when you buy a CD or you buy a t-shirt at a concert, like, that money goes right in their pockets. Rather than if you just buy an album, they're only getting a fraction of that cost. I mean, and it's a little bit different now than it probably was 15 years ago, where if you bought it from an industry, you bought it from like a record store, then like the percentage of money that the band was making is far smaller than if you buy it off Bandcamp, which I'm pretty sure just goes right in their pocket. So like there's like a back and forth to this, and obviously the industry's changing in terms of music, but in terms of comic books, like we don't, like there isn't a lot we can do. You know, like, other than just straight up buying the comic books. Because, like, if you love a character, you should be buying that comic book straight up. Like, there's no question about it. Because if every sale that isn't made is, like, one more count towards that book not being made again in the future.
Right, exactly. That's the whole voting with your dollars kind of thing. Or if you want to support a particular artist or creator or a character, you kind of have to spend the money.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the other pop culture or, you know, other media are reaching a point where people are getting used to getting content without paying for it. That's not an option for comics. And that could be an option for, like we just said, music or whatever. That's not an option for comics. If you want to support something, you're going to have to spend money. Another consequence, I think, of this type of controversy is that there's a lot of really talented people on Redbubble that are making their own content and posting it. I know I've bought stuff from there from artists who are posting original stuff, not ripping anybody off. So I don't want to see this type of reaction to Redbubble hurting those people that are actually making stuff and making a living off selling their own creations on there.
Totally. I hear you.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just crazy frustrating to, I can't even imagine what it must feel like. And I think probably one of the bigger issues is that if you just have people, and I don't want to use the word casual, so to speak, but, you know, just casual fans that are like, oh, you know, that's a cool Batman shirt. Like, if you were to show it to me, I can be like, you know, holy cow, that's Jock, or that's Jim Lee's work, or whomever, and clearly someone's ripping someone off here, whereas someone else just sees it and goes, huh, that's a pretty neat Batman design, and doesn't really go, well, I wonder if these people created it, you know, I don't know how many proactive geek merchandise purchasers are sitting down and thinking to themselves, I wonder whose design this truly is. I mean, how many people are doing that?
Well, even though we both sort of ignored Convergence, Nick, I'm sure you saw this interview with Dan Didio, publisher of DC, announcing what's going to be coming afterwards. And I'm kind of curious about what's in store for DC Comics looking forward. Basically, Didio's point was that tying in with their new marketing campaign, DCU, that's U with Y-O-U, the focus is going to be on attracting new and diverse readers and new and diverse creators, and basically giving them more freedom to write the kind of books they want, appeal to different types of readers who are looking for more books that stand on their own, less tied to continuity. Personally, I find this really exciting because that's kind of been my approach when I came back to read comics a few years ago. I wasn't interested in big overarching continuity. I wanted to just read creators I liked, characters I liked, and have the books sort of stand on their own. If this really what DC is aiming for with this new campaign, I'm on board. I kind of have a few books that they're launching soon I'm interested in. What are your thoughts on this, Nick? Is this appealing to you, or do you think this might just blow up in their face again like the New 52 did?
It's definitely a good question. As I think I've brought up before, in a lot of ways, this really doesn't feel that different from when the New 52 launched. Back when that happened, of course, we had some really, really odd, super out there books. I mean, I guess what would be a good example, like Men of War was definitely a sort of genre piece all by itself, or OMAC would certainly be another that comes to mind. Or like Resurrection Man, and you know, a lot of these weird books were of varying quality, and definitely a lot of them were very much genre pieces. But I think a lot of people now, a couple years removed, look at the New 52 and they think it was this just mess of books that were constantly enmeshed with one another in terms of canon, and it didn't start out that way. But the weird, standalone, really obscure, weird character books, and again, not all of them were bad, but they were definitely odd, just sort of fell by the wayside. And I hope that doesn't happen this time. To answer your question, I'm sort of interested. There's a few books I'm going to be doing. I'm going to do Dr. Fate. I'm going to do the new Constantine book. I might try the new Green Arrow team. And I'm kind of tempted to try Black Canary. But some of the other ones are just a little too out there for me. Like the Omega Men one, as much as I love the writer, who he was the co-writer on Grayson. I can't remember his name. And like stuff like Omega Men and stuff like Prez just seem a little weird. There's definitely quite a few that I'm going to trade weight on. But yeah, I sort of don't really know if this is as different as DC wants us to believe it is. I do think readers are more receptive to this sort of book. I think readers have definitely been spoiled the last couple years with sort of Image's offerings of standalone books with an emphasis on creators. So they might get a slightly better reception this time around, but I don't think it's really that different than the first time around.
Yeah, I think you're right. I imagine that there's sort of flagship titles will still have that sort of heavy continuity. The Superman titles, the Batman titles, Justice League will be the flagship book. You won't see radical changes there, obviously, but I like the approach that they're taking by having books like Prez or books like Bizarro, Batmite, these characters that are part of the publisher's history that don't really have a place in the modern continuity. Why not just do a little 6-issue miniseries, find a creator that's interested in that character, could do something interesting with it, and just do it for 6 issues. Have a standalone that you can sell as a trade down the road. That's a really, really smart approach that, like you said, kind of mimics the success that Image has had by having a creator-specific framework for their books. Specifically for me, I guess I'm interested in Black Canary, mainly because of Annie Wu's art. I'm interested in Martian Manhunter, because I've always liked that character, but he's always been a part of the Justice League. He's never really had a standalone book that's done anything. And Rob Williams, who I really enjoy, is going to be writing that. But I like this approach where I can pick and choose what I'm reading. I don't feel indebted to be reading a bunch of titles I'm kind of on the fence about just because they might tie in with stuff I like. If I can pick and choose my DC universe, that's right up my alley, and that's the way I like to read comics.
What about you, Mike? Like, do any of these books look even sort of interesting to you, or?
You know, the only two books I have any interest in, I think are the ones that you guys have already mentioned, like Black Canary and Hellblazer, or the Constantine book, whatever it's going to be called. Mostly because, like, one, I am still interested in Constantine. I still think his character's interesting. And Annie Wu's going to be on Black Canary. And, like, I'm all for trying out Black Canary. Like, especially if Annie Wu's on it. Like, I like her art a lot. I think she does some really cool stuff, and like, I'm willing to give it an issue or two. Dr. Fate, to me, Nick, the way that you've explained it to me and from what I've done minor research on in terms of the character, seems like, you know, DC's answer to Doctor Strange, and I'm all for that kind of cool mysticism shit. So, like, I don't know. Like, I'm willing to try a little bit of this, but I don't think, like, I'm actually sold. Like, I might read Bizarro because it's a miniseries, and from what I've seen, it looks kind of fun. Batmite's the exact same way. Like, these little one-off things are going to get me into, like, just get little appetizers at DC just to see, like, maybe it is for me. Maybe I can try something out. And unfortunately, I don't think we'll ever see anything like that with any of the major DC characters, right. Which is kind of a shame. Like, I'd love to just read, like, little trades of, like, going back to the way that DC used to do it, where they do these little trades of, like, characters, and you're like, hey, man, remember Dark Knight Rises? Like, that was cool. It didn't really play into the bigger Batman continuity, but, like, it was a Batman story. And I realize that, like, that's kind of an exception, maybe. But, like, imagine if they did, like, an in-continuity miniseries that was tied, like, it was outside of the main Batman story, and it was just, like, six-issue run of, like, an arc, and then you could be like, here, this is, like, a good jumping-on point if you want to get into a Batman story. You don't have to read any of the other stuff. It's like, just here's a cool Batman story. Like, I think we're missing that in DC. And I mean, like, I think Marvel could take a page out of that too. Just say, like, here are these little trades that you could just give out to people, you know? And I think that DC tried to do that with their Earth One stuff. Didn't really pan out for them, but they are in a very unique unique position right now where they're saying, we're willing to try some new stuff to try to get more readers. And, like, this is the way, I think this is the best way to do it, especially with trade sales being such a big thing nowadays. But as far as, like, interest in a lot of this other stuff, I feel the same way as I did before, even with the New 52. Like, I don't want to get burned again like I did with the New 52. So, like, I'm very hesitant to try anything until maybe I hear reviews about the first two or three or four issues, or maybe hear someone at the comic shop talk about it, or one of you guys talk about it, because I'm just, I don't know. Like, I'm real burned out on Big Two comics, which leads into a whole different discussion that we don't have to get into this week, but I think about, like, like, once you're in comics for long enough, like, do you eventually just get burned out on the Big Two and you just move into other stuff? But nonetheless, I think this is very interesting to see DC going the route of, you know, this, like, less heavy on continuity and more about telling good stories thing, and giving these sample books out, I guess, in a way, is kind of a good way to try to test the waters to see what people really, really want to read.
Yeah, you know, they've been doing that, I think, to lead up to this new approach. I know on Comixology, at least, they have previews of all the new titles that they're putting out. I think it's like a little 8 or 10 page preview of each title, so you can try things out before you commit to buy them. And it also gives you an interesting way to see what approach these new creators are going to take. The best thing that they're doing with this new campaign as opposed to New 52 is they're actually bringing in a bigger, more diverse group of creators. That was kind of the joke when the New 52 started. We had new series, but they're written by Scott Liddell, or they're drawn by Rob Liefeld. It's like, what? No, like, did we travel back to the 90s all of a sudden? So the fact that they're giving someone like Gene Yang, who's known for doing more non-superhero indie books, more autobiographical kind of books, they're letting him write Superman, like the biggest character that they have, not on a miniseries, so, but on Superman the title, right? So that's really remarkable, and that's another book I'm actually looking forward to, mainly because of the creator. I mean, I love Superman, but I haven't read that title regularly in years. But putting a creator like that on a book with that prestige, that feels like a big move for them. And something that they didn't do with the New 52. They made it sound like a big change, but it wasn't radical enough. This feels like it's almost the step in the right direction that way.
Like, this is what they should have done when the New 52 started.
Exactly.
So what are you guys looking forward to the most? I guess, like, what out of all of this, like, what is the biggest thing, like, you think? I mean, I know that obviously the diversity and stuff, but, like, are there any real books that are catching your eye that, like, seem so far out there? I mean, maybe we've already covered this and I wasn't paying attention or something, but, like, seems so far out there that it's like, wow, I can't believe DC is doing this.
I think the Prez miniseries is the kind of the biggest surprise to me, because that's such an obscure character.
Who is Prez? Okay. I really don't know who that is.
Is that a miniseries? Are you certain that's not actually ongoing?
I have to imagine it's a miniseries.
I think it's okay.
So basically, Prez was a character that was introduced, and the original Prez series, I think, only lasted 4 issues before it was canceled. But it was late 60s or very early 70s created by Joe Simon, who's the guy who co-created Captain America with Jack Kirby. And Prez, the idea was that they lowered the voting age to 16, so a teenager who was actually named Prez by his mom because she wanted him to grow up to be president, was elected president. And the whole idea was like he was a teenager that was president. So it's Prez, teen president. And so,
oh my God. What a goofy a concept.
Exactly. And it makes total sense at the time when DC's just, back then you publish all sorts of stuff, not just superheroes, but whatever you could, you know, hopefully make some money on. And that original series was so weird even back then that it only lasted 4 issues before it got canned. So if you can kind of have a serious approach to that character or an updated approach to that character, that could be a lot of fun.
So bizarre.
Yeah, that Prez seems really weird. I'll definitely pick that up probably in trade, just because I really loved Prez actually had, I mean, I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but Neil Gaiman in Sandman actually, Paul, wasn't it just a single issue? And I think it was just a Prez story that turned out to be another part of the Dreaming or whatever, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
And that was really weird, but it was cool, and so I think that's interesting. Like I said before, the Hellblazer, Riley Rossmo and Ming Doyle, and I think James Tinian is also writing that. That looks good. I think Cullen Bunn is now on Aquaman, and I think that's one of the things that sort of we haven't brought up, but amongst all of the new books, we're also getting some pretty big change-ups in terms of actual lineups on books. And so I think that's sort of been buried beneath it. But yeah, Cullen Bunn's going to be on Aquaman. I think Jeff Parker got moved on to Justice League United, which for a while did not have a writer lined up at all. And I'm super mad because I dropped that book. And now it's Jeff Parker and Trevor... Travel Foreman, the Animal Man artist, is going to be doing the art, so I'm hardcore pissed about that, and I'm probably going to be picking that up.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. I'm going to have to pick that up, too.
Right?
I might try that just for the art. Oh, man.
Yeah, so if anything else, take a look, and if any of you are sort of thinking a lot of these new titles don't really seem like my cup of tea, I would really encourage all of you to take a look at some of the teams following Convergence, because a lot of the books have brand new teams lined up, and Cullen Bunn has taken on a bunch of books, etc., etc., and you might find that a book that you didn't previously enjoy has actually got new creators on it that you might.
Thank you for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast, a production of Destroy the Cyborg, produced by Mike Rappin, and produced and edited by Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Poldor, Shinsky, and Infinity Shred. If you'd like to keep up with the I Read Comic Books podcast, you can subscribe to it on iTunes and Stitcher. And while you're there, take a quick moment to rate us. If you have any questions, or would like us to talk about something on the podcast, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythecyb.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at @destroythecyb and on Tumblr at destroythecyborg.tumblr.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
Nick, I'm going to mute you until you send me a message in the app that says you're done writing.
Yeah, sure.
Just FYI. Just because all I can hear is clickety clacking, clickety clacking.
It's pretty loud.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna mute you on the server, and then when you're done, I'll unmute you.
Okay.
Sorry, Nick. Now let's talk shit about him, and he can't respond. So let's see, Legends of Tomorrow, which is a thing.
I'm excited for it. I guess that's all I have to say.
I'm really maybe this is something I don't get about TV, but like I don't understand how shows like this can get 15 episode orders before they've even premiered. Like when like it might be really bad.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you know? I don't know much about the actual numbers for ratings, but I mean, The Flash and Arrow seem to be pretty successful critically. So they must just be hoping that they have another hit. And if these shows are so closely sort of intertwined, I don't see why not.
So. Yeah. I mean, and like that to that point, I get it. And I think as far as like, and maybe this is CW just like seriously respecting the shit out of their fans. But just saying like, hey man, if this doesn't go well, at least you guys got a full season, right?
Yeah.
And to me, I think that like when a series, I think when something like that happens, if something gets canceled in a season, but like you get a full season run, that is way better than just having like a 6-episode run where there wasn't a conclusion.
Exactly.
In any sense.
Yep.
So, and that's kind of, I think that's TV more than like comics, but like even to that end, comic books are the same way. Look at the way the Image functions, everything. They order up 6 issues regardless.
That's
They'll
true.
Give you an arc just yeah. because they want to see how trade sales will do. Yeah. And if trade sales don't do well, then you're probably on the outs, which I think is what happened with God Hates Astronauts, which is a little sad.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it's a cool thing to see TV. I mean, like, it's a big investment on their end, but I think it could potentially, for them, it could pay off in like DVD sales or digital sales.
Yeah, especially if they're trying to angle it so the shows are so intertwined that you kind of need a complete story. You know, they're going to be telling one big story with this, so
yeah,
it's a different approach than you usually see with TV.
Harry Potter, wait, oh, I forgot the Harry Potter franchise is still going on with Fantastic Beasts.
I have no idea what that is. I mean, I know nothing about Harry Potter anyway, so.
Okay. So, as someone who has a fucking merit badge in Harry Potter shit, or at least did at one point, I know quite a bit about Harry Potter. That being said, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is a book within the series of Harry Potter.
Okay.
Right? So there's this book that all first-year students at Hogwarts gets called The Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And it's all about the magical creatures of the world that, you know, like griffins and fucking chimera and all the made-up shit that J.K. Rowling made. And I mean, like, quite honestly, it's good. It's like it's a cool world-building exercise for J.K. Rowling that has like a very fun twist on everything. Because in Harry Potter, there, despite how dark and nasty it got sometimes, like on the whole, the book is pretty lighthearted, you know. And so, Fantastic Beasts is just kind of this goofy book that has all this shit in it. Now, at some point, Scholastic published an actual copy of Fantastic Beasts, and it had all these notes from Harry, Hermione, and Ron in it, and stuff like that, as saying like, "Oh, didn't we see one of these in the Dark Forest?" Something like that, and or referencing other parts of the books. I think up through book 5 or something.
Okay.
So it's like a cool little thing, and they published that one, and they published another one. But I think the Fantastic Beasts movie is supposed to be about the creator of that book and him discovering all of these magical creatures across the world.
Okay,
so it's going to be like it's going to be like a traveling story. And of course, there's probably going to be mentioned, you know, we're probably going to run into a young Dumbledore. We're probably going to run into a young Hagrid, or, you know, all the like parents and stuff like that that made up the mythos of the Harry Potter universe.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Huh.
I think it'll be really cool. It's probably not going to be for me because I'm fucking 26, but right. As someone who followed Harry Potter, I mean, for quite a while, like, I think it'll be like a nice little reminder that like that Harry Potter's still there and it's still just as fun. And God help me, I hope this doesn't turn into a fucking like Star Wars franchise, because I really don't think Harry Potter has like
that much enough. I mean, that's
I don't know. I like Star Wars and all, but, like, I don't know. I had this discussion with Xander and Nick at one point about how much, like, my knowledge of sci-fi goes and how I don't really care for Star Wars outside of the movies, even, like, any of the extended universe and comic books.
Right.
I really just don't give a shit.
Yeah, same here.
Which is, yeah. And I don't think I'm one of the only people that says that, but I think whenever you talk to someone who really, really likes Star Wars, they're like, but there's so much more. And I go, I don't care.
Okay.
I'm glad you feel the same way. Now I know I have someone on my side. So, Nick, guess what? Fuck you, man.